Today in our hot seat, we have Silke Schweigert, who is the CEO of Yonkers. Hello, Silke. Good to have you.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, Inge. Very nice to be here. Thank you.
Really glad to have you here, Silke. And are you ready? Shall we do this?
I'm not sure I'm ready for the hot seat, but let's give it a go.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are Nimzi's Inge Boonen, VP of Consulting, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
So Silke, in one sentence, tell us, what is it actually that Yonkers does?
I would say, you know, in one sentence, Yonkers is a bit like the Tesla of the language tech and services industry. We kind of started small, we gave everything, or we are still giving everything we can, and we're making sure that we provide what our customers really need. I mean, just to stay with that comparison, we can compare the electrical engine of the car with the neural MT, for example. It's been around forever, or MT has been around forever, but it's all about how you apply it that makes the difference. And so we're the Tesla of the language industry.
I like that comparison.
Yes, me too. What's the first career that you dreamt of having when you were a kid?
I actually wanted to become a pilot. But then someone told me you had to be really good at maths. So I thought, oh, maybe not. So then I stayed with languages and I studied translation. But I guess the underlying theme remained the same. I wanted to travel a lot. I wanted to be in contact with different peoples and people in different countries. So I guess the underlying theme was still there, but I didn't become a pilot.
When you're not working, how do you like to spend your time? Is that traveling then, or do you also have other hobbies?
Yeah, I definitely like traveling also when I am at work, but when I'm not working, I love spending time with my family. I have a husband, Ken, and I have an 8-year-old son, Mika. So I love spending time with them. All three of us love traveling. We love food. We love doing excursions or just playing in the garden. And I started learning to play the piano 3 years ago. So if I'm not working, I'm trying to practice that as well.
If you were given a chance to visit three different countries, which ones would you choose and why?
I mean, I've traveled to a lot of countries already, but if I had to choose three, I'd probably say India as one of the three. Because I wrote my thesis on India, on the six in India, and I've never really been there in terms of traveling throughout the country. I've only been there on business travel, so I would definitely like to go there and spend a lot of time there. As a second country, probably Japan. Mm-hmm. Same question, I've only been there on business travel. I would love to explore it more. I love the food, but also to see the cherry blossoms and explore the culture more. And then as the third country, I would probably say Madagascar, because my current au pair is from Madagascar. So I would love to go there and see what she's been talking about and meet her family. So those would be the three countries.
Wow, it's really beautiful places that you're choosing. My last question for you is, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
I think I've been given a lot of good advice throughout the years, but the best piece of advice is probably one that my parents gave me as a child already. And they always said, I need to think how to translate this now. Oh God. If you don't ask, the answer is no. So I guess, I think in English you say, never take no as an answer. I think that's the right translation. So basically, you know, always try. And don't be shy to ask. And it's a skill that I am applying every day. And it's a skill that some people get very uncomfortable with when they're on the road with me. Because I will ask and I will, for example, in a hotel say, oh, could I get an upgrade to a nicer room? Or, you know, in an airplane, I will ask for stuff. Or I think the most embarrassing, but then yet successful situation I will never forget was I was in at a customer meeting with one of my team members. And after the meeting, we went out for dinner. And I took my napkin and I took a pen in my hand and I started drawing his name or writing his name. And I said, okay, so this is you. So who do you report into? And I started writing down the names and the guy was talking about his organization. So at the end of the conversation, I had the whole org chart basically on my napkin. And when we left the dinner, my colleague said, oh my God, you know, how could you just do this? And she said, we've been trying to get this org chart for years. We never got it. And I said, well, you know, you always... I've already got to know if he doesn't want to talk about it, he's not going to tell me, but I can ask the question, right? So I think that is helping me throughout life a lot, actually, that piece of advice. So that would be the best piece of advice.
That's fantastic, Silke. And you know what? My Flemish mother gave me exactly the same advice. I even at some point wrote a LinkedIn post about it. So how did your mother say that in Flemish for the Flemish listeners?
Oh God, now you're embarrassing me. How did...
My mother said, nee heb je.
Yeah, nee heb je. Voilà, yeah. No, I was just...
And you know what? As a German, I can relate to this too, because we also say that. And I think Germans also tend to be the annoying people who ask for stuff and ask why and say their opinions all the time and speak up. So yeah, and my parents advised me that as well, to never take no for an answer, always ask, never accept anything as a given, ask why. So yeah.
Well, and this is then a Flemish living in Germany, so it's the combination of both.
Yeah, exactly. Amplified, maybe. What was your first breakthrough in your career where you felt like, okay, I'm onto something here, I'm doing something differently, I'm doing something right, or was there a moment?
If I think about it, so I would probably say that in my early years in my career, so I've been in the language industry since 99, so quite a while now. What is that, 22 years or so, 23 years. And in my early years, I didn't really have active, conscious ambitions. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I wanted to become or something like that. But I started off as a project manager, became a team lead. Then I was a German general manager. So all of this was within my time at SDL. Then I was the regional VP of EMEA. My last position in SDL was I was the global chief delivery, and I had 2,500 employees in 38 countries. So massive job. And now I'm the CEO at Yonkers. So even though I didn't have any conscious ambitions, clearly I had some, otherwise I wouldn't have gone through those phases. Mm-hmm. I think what happened at certain stages in my career is that I have a natural tendency or love for challenges. And so people throw issues at me and I will take them on and I will drive them, take ownership if it goes wrong. And I think that was something I realized and that I then took throughout my career. And I think that was kind of a breakthrough when I consciously noticed that actually that was what was getting me to the next stage, and kind of just working with people, always having a strong team around me. That's what basically got me through my career so far. So one line really of moving up the ladder, but without a clear or structured plan ahead, but always with the support of people around me.
And you were just saying that you like tackling challenges. What do you love about it? And is there a particular one that you can recall that was maybe difficult to crack, but you overcame it in a certain way? Something, do you have a nice story to share?
Yeah, there's plenty of them. So again, very early in my career, I was a team lead in SDL. It was actually Alpnet at the time still. Alpnet got acquired by SDL. And at the time, the local management of Alpnet had decided to set up their own company, which is still successful in Germany nowadays. But what that meant for the Stuttgart site was actually that the people there in the office were without a management team. After just having been acquired by an English company, so it was quite challenging. So we got a visitor from headquarters from STL looking for someone to head up the operation. Now, you know, just a small detail, but I was 27 at the time. So when I was asked to take on that responsibility, having mentioned what I said before, that I didn't really have clear ambitions, I thought, okay, I'm 27, I'm not sure I can deal with this challenge. But my concern the whole time was, I don't want to let the team down. Mm-hmm. And I know we can kind of do this and we can set it up and we can, you know, we can survive was kind of the big thing at the time. And so I did. I took on the challenge. I did. What was very important for me at the time is I wanted to have the support of the people around me. So my colleagues within the company, but also my customers. So really checking with them as well, how they saw it. And then I took the challenge and I swam in the cold water and did lots of things that I didn't know how to do them at first. But through taking ownership and making clear decisions, we made it. So definitely one challenge that I took on board at the time.
Oh, sounds good. And I like that as well. And I always feel like when an opportunity like this comes your way as well, you should just take it and figure it out. You know,
absolutely.
You know, these are success stories so far. And but along the road of success, there's inevitably going to be some failure as well. Do you recall maybe one, like either your biggest or one of your biggest failures and what you learned from it?
Mm-hmm. Probably in the same era, like 1, 2, 3 years later, like early management years. And it's probably also a big piece of advice I'd like to give to newly managers. Is that at the beginning, I wanted to be liked. Mm-hmm. It was like, because I'm, you know, I'm a likable person, I love people, and it was important for me that people like me. It's still very nice if people like me. However, at that time, it was very difficult for me to make harsh decisions. Mm-hmm. And this is especially true when you're talking about people. And so one of my biggest failures, I would say, is probably sometimes taking too long to let go of people in the organizations. The team is always, it's a bit like an apple. If you have one little foul piece of the apple, and this can foul can be either that it's bad performance or just someone who doesn't fit in the team, you need to cut it out. Because if you don't cut it out, your whole apple is going to be brown. Mm-hmm. And that was a big lesson for me to learn is, you know, take those decisions faster, even though they're painful and even though you won't be liked for it, at least not in the beginning. It's an important one to learn.
Just wondering, was there like a big waste of time in your organization that you kind of realized and maybe recovered from, hopefully recovered from, of course?
Well, I'm going to take one that is still an issue.
Perfect.
And it's not just in my current organization. It was in my previous organization as well. It's internal emails. I really dislike internal emails. I would love to get rid of them. It's one of my big ambitions to get rid of email. I don't like people being driven by email. So that's definitely for me a time waster. For me, it's all about either picking up the phone if it's something that needs sorting or structuring it in a bigger way. But the way that emails are being sent, a lot of the emails are a waste of time.
Aside from, you know, as CEO, you're of course also focusing on profitability. But aside from that, what are the three main things you spend your time on?
We spend hours per week talking about words online and how we can, you know, what's next on the roadmap? What do we need to start thinking about? Because technology, in our view, is really key to drive this industry forward. It's all about automation. I mean, there's more content on the market. The customers want the content to be translated faster. They want it to be translated in more languages because it becomes easier to do business in different countries. But obviously they have the same budget to do it with and they want it at the same quality. So you can only do that if you automate. So a lot of my time goes on innovation technology discussions. Another topic that I spend time on is obviously growth of the company. How can we grow organically? What about our new sales? You maybe saw recently that we launched a subscription model online. So again, trying to be innovative there and drive growth of the company. And then the third area, I would say, which is not the least important, so it's not an order of priority necessarily, is people. I mean, I strongly believe that people is what makes the company successful. So, you know, we can't pay the best salaries out there in the industry. So I need to make sure that whatever we do, we empower people to do the best job they can within an environment that they like being in. And so you might have heard this on the news as well. We launched unlimited holidays, for example, which again is to empower our employees and to have a better work-life balance. Or we're now drafting a policy around remote working because, you know, obviously now with Corona, everyone had to work remotely. Mm-hmm. So we've all been proven that it is possible. So we're now looking at, you know, how can we define this in our policies and continue to enable this. So things like that. So the three things are really innovation, technology, growth, and people.
What advice would you give to young entrepreneurs starting their own business in the language industry? I know you've given advice throughout all of this already, but just if there was one piece.
Probably it would be think about your USP, so about your unique selling proposition, whether it is addressing the market requirements that I just mentioned, you know, more volume, more language, faster and at the same quality. Is your offering addressing this? Double check it. And then I would say, you know, surround yourself with talented people. It's always good to have people around you that are better than you are. Mm-hmm. If you do that, then, you know, the company will strive and you'll be successful.
Excellent advice. Thank you.
Love that. And thank you so much, Silke, for joining us in the hot seat. I hope you didn't sweat too much.
Yeah, I'm going to. No, it was very nice. Thank you very much for having me on it.
If anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you are part of the C-suite at a company in the language services industry, sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
And for the viewers at home, this was it for today. Thank you so much for watching and look out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website.